In politics this week, President Obama hosted the French president at the White House, members of Congress threatened to shut down the government over a possible climate deal, and Donald Trump did another cannonball dive in the swimming pool of presidential politics. Here to discuss all of that is David Brooks of the New York Times, joining us this week from Philadelphia. Hi, David.
Hello.
And also Amy Sullivan of Yahoo News is here in the studio. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Ari.
Let's start with Trump. We have a clip here from a rally on Tuesday where he mocks a reporter named Serge Kovaleski, who has a degenerative joint condition. Trump is using an article that Kovaleski wrote 14 years ago to back up the false claim that thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrated after 9/11. Let's listen.
Written by a nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said.
So not the first time Donald Trump has mocked a reporter, also not the first time he's made a claim that isn't supported by the facts. But David, this seems like a new level on both counts.
He hits new levels. He started a new level and he keeps hitting them. I think for me, the big question is Trump for real? He's been on top of the polls for about 4 months doing antics like this and nothing seems to hurt him. So is he for real? And I still think the answer is no. When you look at Iowa, New Hampshire in years past, when the voters made up their mind, they made up their mind in the last couple weeks. 80% of the voters made up their mind in the last couple weeks. So it's important to remember that if when you look at the polls, of course, they'll give you an answer if you ask them who to vote for. But those voters, at least 80% of them, are still undecided. And it just boggles my mind that when they actually do decide on something real, they're going to go for Trump. So I'm sticking with the camp that all this is just a pregame mirage.
Well, Amy, do you think this is wishful thinking on David's part? I mean, people thought Trump would fade after the Paris attacks. They thought Trump would fade at the end of the summer. People kept thinking Trump would fade, and he hasn't faded.
He hasn't faded, and I think the Republican Party very much hopes that he will. They're hoping that this is just kind of a flash in the pan, and yet he keeps sticking around. And as far as we can tell from polling, his outrageous statements, which keep topping each other one after the other, are not pushing away his core supporters. Now, whether he has anything more than what seems to be a ceiling of about 20% is still up for grabs, and we will know as the field starts to narrow, or continues to narrow even more, farewell Bobby Jindal, where Donald Trump has some room to grow, or whether you'll see other candidates coming in.
Speaking of other candidates, Ben Carson made an interesting move this week. He left yesterday evening for Jordan to visit with Syrian refugees, and of course this happens as Carson takes a lot of questions about how much he knows about foreign policy. David, do you think this trip to a refugee camp in Jordan will help?
Yeah, we'll see if we can find Jordan. I don't think
it sounds
will
help. Like a no to me.
I think he's unlike Trump. Trump has had some downswings and then he's come back, which demonstrates some resilience. Carson, his poll numbers have not shown that resilience. When he starts sliding, so far the slides have continued. And his level of lack of knowledge on some of these foreign policy issues can't be cured by a single trip to a refugee camp.
But it is an interesting move when most of the Republican Party is talking about closing the doors to refugees. Amy, for a Republican presidential candidate to go to a refugee camp in Jordan.
Yeah, well, and especially someone who was comparing refugees to rabid dogs just last week. Ben Carson, I don't think anybody knows what he's doing, including Ben Carson. But it's true that he is, as time goes on, starting to look more and more like what we saw a lot of in 2012 on the Republican side, where Michelle Bachmann would be at the top of the polls and then she'd drop. And Rick Perry would do the same thing and then he'd drop. Herman Cain was at one point the Republican frontrunner.
I remember somebody memorably describing it as the Angry Birds candidacy, where one after another they would go up and then plummet down. Well, before the Obama family turned their attention to turkey pardons and pumpkin pies, President Obama hosted the French leader, François Hollande, at the White House this week. Let's listen to a bit of that.
We're here today to declare that the United States and France stand united in total solidarity to deliver justice to these terrorists and those who sent them, and to defend our nations.
This week, Hollande also visited Moscow to try to get Russian President Vladimir Putin to focus on defeating ISIS. But also this week, Turkey shot down a Russian fighter jet near the Syrian border. So, Amy, when it comes to Syria, the fight against ISIS, would you say things are moving in a better or worse direction after this week's events?
I would say it's still a complete mess. And it continues to get a little more complicated. You've got Turkey going after Kurdish fighters. who are fighting ISIS. You've got the Russians bombing moderate Syrians, who the U.S. would like them to stop bombing. Apparently, what has come out of the meeting between Hollande and Putin is Putin requested a map of the people he shouldn't be bombing and said, well, you know, once you can get that to us, sure, we'll stop bombing the people we think we shouldn't be. You know, this continues to be just kind of a morass. And it was hard to know what to make of the meeting between Hollande and Obama, because there's not much that the U.S. is willing to do right now or can do more than offer verbal support. Joe Biden said at one point, like, we haven't just been doing most of it, we've been doing it all. We've been doing 95% of the airstrikes in Syria.
David, what would you say? There is a lot of activity, but what direction is this actually moving?
Well, listen, this thing is only going to be resolved. ISIS is only going to be weakened if the Sunnis on the ground, the normal Sunnis, take arms against it, as they did against al-Qaeda in Iraq, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And that's only going to happen if Assad is taken out. As long as Assad is basically committing genocide against the Sunnis are going to stick with ISIS. And so the idea that we can have some alliance with Putin, who's Assad's main backer, is a chimera. And so we can have an alliance with France, and hopefully we can have an alliance with the Turkmen and some of the people on the ground. But we can't have an alliance with Putin because his interests are diametrically opposed to ours. I thought what happened with the Turks and the Russians was the big story here. It showed that in a vacuum, all the people with old historical claims, and of course Turkey has historical claims on Syria, are leaping in and trying to fill the void. And so it seems to me the font of strategic clarity here is thinking, of course, we've got to get rid of ISIS, but we can't get rid of ISIS unless Assad is gone. And so there has to be this very complicated two-track policy, which simply cannot involve Putin because he's against that policy.
Last item I want to ask you about just briefly, with a climate conference starting in Paris next week, 200 countries meeting, Republicans in Congress threatening to shut down the government over money to poor countries for climate change. David, is shutting down the government becoming a standard political tool these days?
Threatening it seems to be over everything from Planned Parenthood to climate change. But if you look at polls of Republican voters, they hate the idea of shutting down the government. So they may oppose some of the climate measures, but the idea of shutting down the government and destabilizing the U.S. is very unpopular, even among Republicans.
That's David Brooks of The New York Times and also Amy Sullivan of Yahoo News. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.